Hello, I'm Gemma Birrell. You're listening to a podcast about France and contemporary politics, recorded live at the 2016 Festival. This discussion takes a fresh look at some of the most pressing issues facing France today, with novelist and Charlie Hebdo contributor Marie Dariussec, fellow Warsaw Nicolas Fargue, and writer and diplomat Jean-Christophe Ruffin. They speak with Geraldine Doogue.
So good morning and welcome. I'm Geraldine Doogue. I'm delighted to welcome you to this session at the City Writers Festival, where we're to be challenged to think by three French writers about the predicaments facing their country and maybe by extension our own. Many of us here in Australia might have a romanticised view of France and its culture. Many of us might have been especially shocked and horrified by the terrorist attacks in France last year. I doubt any of us were as traumatised as the French themselves, a reaction that, from what I read, isn't disappearing. With distance from the actual attacks, might even be intensifying. Some talk of a real sort of existential crisis for the French, but I'll test that out. So today I'll introduce you to the writers, all of whose books are all here. There's a third book here. And they've gained considerable acclaim and rushing off the shelves, I'm delighted to say, but I may well just use them as a backdrop and tap in instead their insights into the mood and temperaments of modern France. So, ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome Marie Dariussec, Jean-Christophe Ruffin and Nicolas Fargue. Now, I'm going to ask you all a setup question so we hear all your voices, and then we might move out from there. How would you all best help Australians understand the mood of modern France, trying to come to terms with these various attacks? Use your well-known power of words, if you would, to convey the image that you think helps people here understand. Marie.
Should I start? What's the mood in France? That's okay. There is Paris, there is the country. I live in Paris, I was born in the Basque country. When you go in Basque country, at the moment Basque country is a part of France, okay, next to Spain, you don't feel anything has changed actually. But in Paris, what can I say? There are people who think that having a cafe on a terrace outside is an act of resistance. I think it's cute, I think it's pretty, but it's, I mean, life goes on, life goes on. For me, what has changed is that when my kids are on the subway, I feel worried. That's new. And when I go get the little one out of school at 4:30, I'm worried because there are 200 people gathering in a very tiny space on the pavement and we are very vulnerable to any, you know, attack. That's the difference. But let's talk together.
Just before I go to Nicolas, I noticed that you were saying that these days there are instructions for you all. And we'll come to the sort of act of defiance that you did because you actually volunteered to write for Charlie Hebdo straight away. Escape, hide, alert others are these three messages.
But you should see the poster.
Well, that's pretty staggering, isn't it? Escape, hide, alert others. The poster to you.
Tu l'as vu, l'affiche?
No.
No.
You haven't seen it?
No.
No. But you have it, Charlie. This is at Charlie Hebdo.
No, no. You've seen the poster because these guys. You don't live in. You've not been living in France for a few months.
For 4 years.
Because in all the public spaces in France, you have this poster. With these three injunctions and images of people hiding behind couches or running to alert other people. And you feel so, vulnerable again.
It's pretty stark. It's a little bit more than be alert, not alarmed, I think, which is what we had a few years ago. Now, Nicolas, how would you answer? How would you best convey to us here?
Okay. What I feel the most sensitive about and what hurts me the most, I think, is the tension between communities in France. We're a multicultural country in France, but we have some difficulty to really admit it. I don't know if there's any Western country where you have such silent, more or less outspoken aggressivity between communities than in France.
What were the words you used then?
Outspoken. I mean, tension. I mean,
it's explicit. It's on display.
I was talking with Jean-Christophe the day before yesterday, and I just realized that maybe outside Middle East, outside Israel, maybe there's no Western country in the world, maybe where you have that hatred between Arabs and Jews, for example, than France. And that could be a key to explain also what's happening at the moment. So I'm sensitive about the all those jobless people and so on, but I think the key for our future is just to admit for good that we are a multicultural country with all our strength into that you can find among all those young people coming from any kind of background. We have what we call in France a glass ceiling. Like if you are black skin, or you come from North Africa, or you have to prove twice that you are able to rent a house or to find a job. Even if you're on your passport is written that you are French. That's the problem in France, I guess. One of the biggest problems. And all our politicians all come from the same background, white, male, and so on, Christian.
There are some little changes. No. Little.
So yeah. Little changes.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So little. In fact, you've got this great line, Nicholas, that I love my country, but I don't want to live there anymore. It's a bit like a member of the family whom you care for, but you don't want to live with. It's too hard. I prefer to love them from afar.
Yeah. No, actually, yes, it's a bit excessive, but that's true that I prefer coming to France for a few days or for a few weeks because I prefer being lost in translation and being able to know and to gather what we have lessons to learn from other countries, even countries that are not that far from France. Yeah. We're still really stuck onto ourselves. I just want us to be
introspective almost. Is that what you mean? Is it? Oh, okay. Interesting.
No, I guess maybe a lack of real curiosity, or or we have to put ourselves in question more than we do.
Jean-Christophe, how would you see it?
I think we should not exaggerate. You know, a friend of mine who's a writer, Sylvain Tesson, he used to say, France is a paradise in which all the inhabitants think they are in hell, you know? So, to some extent, it's not... And after these terrorist attacks, you know, our government, for very political reasons, has declared that it was the state of war. State of war is always good for politicians because it's always easier to send troops abroad and bomb a country than to, you know, improve the employment situation. But anyway, and it is true that which has changed at most in the streets of Paris, speak about Paris, it's true that there is difference with the rest of the country, maybe, but in the great cities and in the capital, which has changed to my mind, it's the fact that you can see troops in the streets. You can, when you walk in a station, in a train station, you see people, you see those soldiers, the poor guys, you know, wearing those bulletproof jackets with their machine gun. And that's the reason why you feel it's war, you know. It's because of the answer to the problem, which was, to my mind, a completely wrong answer, because I deny the fact that we are in a war. We have been attacked, and which has changed just it is that we have thought for maybe 50 years, and it was the reality, that we were in peace, you know, after the end of the last colonial war, the Algerian war, after the prosperity which has come to Europe in the 60s, 70s. We have become a continent in which there was peace, there was prosperity, and we were, to some extent, we were outside the world, we were protected, and we thought that it could last forever. And it doesn't last. I mean, we are not at war, but we are just now back into the world. And the world has always been with wars since the Second World War. There have, maybe because I was involved in humanitarian missions, I've all the time seen wars around us, but not
inside.
And the new thing is that now it touches us, and we are concerned. We are not any longer, we are not protected. We are also targeted.
So why are you reluctant, just for the sake of argument, to use the word war or a form of warfare?
It's a dangerous concept, because being at war means that you have an enemy, clearly. And, you know, we have experienced so many times in the past, in Europe, especially in France, what war is. We had two worldwide wars on our territories. Which happens today is different. It is much more a matter of little groups, you know, terrorist groups spread in the country. It's more a problem of police than of military answer, you know. For me, it's totally meaningless to put soldiers in the streets. Yeah. Totally, because a soldier has...
A war is when you are scared in your own bed that you receive a bomb on your house, and a war is when you are scared that you are not going to be able to feed your kids. So it's not war. We are not in a war. It's different. And yes, it's more a secret service and police reaction that we need.
I would say it's a domestic war, because you know the terrorists in France are homemade terrorists. They're French.
Third generation.
Let's not forget they are French. They were born in France
French
or in Belgium. But they are French. They even can't speak Arabic.
Yeah.
They even don't know nothing about Islam. So where's the war if it's not domestic war? That's why I was talking about tensions between communities. That's the real war.
Yeah, and tension inside the communities.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, okay, so there's this chronic tension. In fact, I was going to quote to you, there's a man called Christopher de Bellegue, whom I've interviewed on my program, who is writing for Prospect magazine, which is a real progressive magazine in England. And I just wanted to read you what he said. The journey from first generation head below the parapet immigrants to strutting third-generation malcontents, applauding anything that hurts the French state, passes through discrimination, unemployment, family breakdown, domestic violence, crime, and very often a spell in prison. The result is a chronic identity crisis that hardline Islamist groups encourage. Now, do you think that's a pretty... It sounded to me that was a reasonable overview. Do you think so, Jean-Christophe?
No. Well, there is since long a debate between England and France about the model of integration, because England has chosen a model based on communities, what we call communitarism, giving the responsibilities of the various community to people chosen among their communities. It's kind of indirect rule, we should say. France has chosen another way, which is more integration through what we call citizenship. Referring to the values of our revolution, which doesn't want to consider communities, which doesn't want to consider races or origins. You know, for instance, ethnical statistics are forbidden in France. It's forbidden to say there are so many blacks, so many Arabs.
You don't have minorities, don't you?
Yeah, it should not
China
exist.
Says that
for
too.
The Republic. For the Republic, we only know citizens. So that was our model. And it is true that this model comes to a limit. We are seeing that this model didn't solve really the problem, that there are really many people in this second generation who don't really accept and are not accepted also inside this community. So they feel something wrong in the fact that nobody wants to consider them different, but they are still. The only thing which makes me a little nervous, it's when the English try to give us lessons, you know. Because I don't think they have done much better with their
well,
system.
But they have of late. They have of late. I mean, I lived in England for four years. And I remember thinking and doing reports in France and thinking, well, the French have escaped this. Look what's happened, you know, with 7-7 and so on. But I don't think that now. And I suppose it's just that sense of whether you think, Murray, that the French themselves are looking at this model and saying, well, forget about the English, what are we saying ourselves about our own model?
Really, I write novels, I'm not very good at ideas, and most of all, I am disorientated today. I don't know what to think, most of all. And I have many questions and not a lot of answers. And I listen a lot to the teenagers and the children because their generation has to invent a new world and new solutions. And I see how my kids really mix in the school. I live in a rather popular area of Paris. And they have different friends, they from all origins. And what they share is pop music, some series, some movies. They share a lot of things. And they have a lot of humor, but I don't know how you can hear that, but to me it's very funny. But you know, when I was a young kid, I used to play cowboys and Indians, okay? And now they play terrorists and Parisians, okay? And they actually, I saw my little kids, my seven-year-old daughter playing with boys and girls from all origins again. And the bad ones were running after the good ones and they were crying, Allahu Akbar, okay? And they are seven. And I don't know, I just tell the story to you. I don't know what to think about it. It's a different world and they were playing, wow. You know, yeah. But they, you know, just sorry, another thing, because again, I'm not very good at ideas, but I can tell stories, I think, even in English. But, okay, I came with my 12 years old daughter, and you know, what happened after November 13? All these teachers at school, with my 15 year old, with my 12 year old, with my 7 year old, different levels. All the teachers had to explain what had happened, okay? And there was this minute of silence at noon on Monday 15. And the teachers before the minute of silence had to explain what had happened. So my 7 year old, she was taught what is a kamikaze. She's seven, you know, so she came back from school saying, so they exploded and there was flesh everywhere. And, you know, that's the world she lives in. And my 12-year-old, and that's the end of the story, but my 12-year-old, I had a phone call from school saying, you know, we think Claire has been very traumatized. Do you talk about it at home? Because she should see a shrink. And I asked, what happened? And they said, when the teacher finished her lesson saying, they attacked us for no reason. My daughter said, it was not for no reason. And you know what she meant. She meant they didn't have excuses, but in their point of view, they may have reasons. That's what she meant. And so, and that made a big fuss.
What did you say back?
Oh, I told her when she came to school that I was proud of her, but that she should stay quiet at some moments, you know, that she should, yeah.
Yeah. That is a wonderfully interesting story. I just, what did you say back to the teacher who said you should take it to a shrink?
Oh, my daughter already sees a shrink. Oh, so.
That's beautiful. Nicholas, I suppose. The cabbie on the way here said, he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm talking about French politics. He said, oh, make them laugh. I said, okay, I'll take that. So you've done it. Now, Nicholas, I suppose this is why you want to stay a little bit away, because this is hard stuff, isn't it?
No, I have a different experience. I have two kids as well, two sons. One is 19 years old, the other one is 15, and they are mixed raced. Kids. My ex-wife is from Congo. And I can tell you that my eldest son is really exhausted of being always asked, where do you come from? He's even more French than I am. He has spent 100% of his life in France. And you told about, Marie, about mixing all together in the classrooms. Okay, we may be mixed in the classrooms, but outside the classroom, we are not mixed anymore at all. The music we listen to, the food we eat, the sense of humor we have is not the same. And that makes a big difference among kids, really. So the, the partition is, is here at the beginning, at the very start of the kindergarten. When I was younger, when I was at school myself, I really feel that those divisions were much lower than, that they are now. Yeah. The first generation of immigrants, they just wanted to integrate by themselves without being asked to integrate themselves. They even wanted to change their names. Their grandchildren have completely changed. Even if they don't know nothing about their origins, the country their grandparents come from, they prefer taking out a flag from that country instead of the French one.
So it is
that means there's a problem with our values.
But not all of them, Nicolas.
Sorry?
Not all of them.
A quite big part of them. You know what?
And you know what?
Yeah.
Not the girls.
Not the girls.
Not the girls.
So the boys.
Yeah.
Well, I don't agree on that. You know, any society,
I think
that
we have different experiences.
Different
point of view, different experiences. I think that girls as
some
well.
Some girls, okay. But don't. Okay.
No, but she makes a good point. I mean, when you see, for instance, the way of life of the young second generation girls, many of them are graduate, they have good jobs, they are completely integrated, and the brother is in prison.
Yeah.
And this is something that that happened to our former Ministry of Justice, Rachida Dati. She was Minister of Justice,
her brother
was in jail. It's a good system.
Jean-Christophe, what about all those young girls who right now want to go to Syria to fight?
No, but this is different.
There are a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah. What I wanted to tell is that for this question of, of course, there are people who go that way of rebellion, of they choose action, even terrorist action or radical. But we have to keep in mind, you're speaking about our values. One of our values, referring always to the French Revolution, one of our values is to say to someone, okay, you belong to a community. For instance, you are a second generation coming from Algeria. You belong to a community, but you're right. And the right that we can guarantee for you is that you can be part of this community, but you can also live on your own and choose another way. I mean, you know, the communitarism, which is very terrible in communitarism, chosen by the English or the Belgian, for instance, is to say, you come from Africa, you live with African, and you live like Africans. No, you come from Africa, you live as you want. And if you want to accept that, to live...
But that doesn't seem to be working, Jean-Christophe.
Well, it works. No, we must not evaluate the global situation on what happens to some of them. Of course, there is a problem, of course. This problem doesn't come from nothing. It comes from failure of integration, but it comes also for other reasons. For instance, the propaganda made in our outskirts by our great friends like Qatar and Saudi Arabia, with their radio, their television, which put in the mind of all these youth that they should revenge the Palestinian, that they should join the jihad, and so on and so forth. So they receive this influence, which is very, they are not living only in our system. They are living in our system plus the influence they receive from abroad.
But why are they susceptible? That's the question, isn't it? Why are they particularly susceptible in France?
Because, of course, some of them, they are facing difficulties to get into the job, that's true. But you started saying that those people who have committed these terrorist attacks were integrated. They were not people marginalized. They were people who had gone to school, who have good jobs. They are not, you know, here in Australia, I was seeing the television, there is a trial ongoing with people for who wanted to go to Syria with a boat. And I was seeing these gentlemen, these guys going out from the court with beard, you know, and we don't see that. I mean, our terrorists, they are not like that.
I know.
These terrorists, it's like a carnival. I mean, they are... our terrorists, they are dressed like you and me. They are integrated. They are people inside. You know, they are not marginalized and different people. They are like us.
But that's what makes it all the more perplexing, does it not?
Yeah.
That's exactly why we're sitting here.
Yeah, but maybe, you know, also it's, you know, at a certain age you have to choose your identity, your cause, your fight, your rebellion. I don't know if I was a young Arab today in France, maybe I would be attracted by this kind of... there is a part... As the witness says, those who go there, and there is a part of romanticism, as strange as it seems, you know, but those girls who get in love with someone by internet and who go to Syria and get married there to share the fight for the jihad and all, well, it's a kind of romanticism.
Let me come back to Nicola. Your children, your sons, do they, you said that there's this terrific gulf, and even in a sort of sensibility about humour and about stories and literature, I presume you mean, you know, how people enjoy themselves. Can you, after Bataclan and so on, is there a conviction that that has to be closed, that gulf?
No. No, unfortunately not. I mean, if you go on Facebook, you see that they're all... Maybe I didn't get your question.
Well, do your sons say we've got to do something about closing this gap between what we all enjoy?
They don't think about that. They just try to
survive, really.
Yeah, I mean they know, they really think they are different from their classmates, for example, from their white classmates, for example. So they don't try to...
So they've got their own culture, their own group.
Absolutely. That's why, you know, I don't agree with that matter of communitarism. If you take Canada, for example, a city like Montreal, you have what we can call communitarism, but you don't have terrorism there. People, you may have the Jewish area, the Asian area, the Indian, and so on. But all those people... We live quite well all together. They have their proper areas, yes, but so what? I mean, during the day they meet in the transportations, at the offices and so on, and it seems to work. In France, we are like, okay, no communitarism here, but actually we are far more divided than in England, for example. We're talking about Great Britain. I think we have lessons to learn from British. On that very matter.
Heresy.
I do believe.
I don't agree with that.
I knew you wouldn't, but I just...
It's very, very dangerous.
The Brookings Institution, for instance, which is American, and that's regarded just the other day, I read, as the most influential think tank in the world, that they actually went and looked, and they said, just this in March, the best prediction for fighter radicalisation, foreign fighter radicalisation, was not a country's wealth, nor how well-educated was its population. It was whether the country was francophone. So 4 to 5 times higher rates of radicalisation in the world in places that are French-speaking. So, I mean, this was a pretty devastating old result, I thought. Murray, I know she doesn't like any of my notes. You won't read my shorthand. Look. I can show it to you. It's here.
Okay. No, go ahead.
It worries you, does it, that?
Yeah. I'm not sure I get the...
The idea that in French, places that are perceived as French-speaking, the rate of local Islamic population, Muslim population, becomes radicalised faster there than in English-speaking countries.
Okay. I learn it, okay. Yeah, it's a disaster. I don't know what to say.
We were talking about ethnical statistics. I think it's a shame in France we we refuse to say that, for example, there's that percentage of black people who can't access to that kind of jobs, that percentage of Muslim people who can't rent that type of houses and so on. We should say that. We should open that kind of
you mean being more open in this
discussion?
Of course. It's all under the radar.
I don't understand why in 2016, in a really huge multicultural country like France, we are still blind on this. We still don't want to talk about that. Like, we are completely stuck on old values. Like, we are all citizens. Liberté, égalité, fraternité. I'm pretty okay on liberté. Égalité, fraternité, not at all. Sorry to say that, but I think we should...
I don't agree. Schools and hospitals are public and free.
They are free,
but... Go to America and see the equality between the poor and the rich. And go and see who is poor. What color are the poor?
No, just one thing.
When you go to the hospital in France, you're not asked anything. You don't even need your papers.
That's true.
You're
it's cured. The same in Canada, for example.
Yes, we don't in the United States. There is a little bit of equality more than a lot of other countries. Fraternity is something else.
I just don't agree about universities. We have, I mean, our education system is pretty bad in France in general. I mean, we are comparing with the international standards in Western countries, we are pretty low. That's the fact. And more, we are not the best schools in France. I knew it perfectly, Marie. At the school, you have to be, admitted after a really high level of education, and that education you get it in your family. Mm-hmm. So, rich people or rich family or educated family have their kids, and mostly they are whites. True,
but I still think
so
in the United States it's even worse. So, come on.
So, just get back before I open the question. Why is fraternity, why is that a dilemma? Why?
La fraternité. Est-ce qu'on est très fraternel?
Well.
First, it's a thing for men, fraternité. It should be sororité also.
But I don't think that's what they said. 1789, but anyway. Yes.
But then...
Now go on. Yeah. I can see you thinking. I know. I can see you struggling, but in a good way.
Oh, no. It's
it's hard.
You know, it's very. I mean, we have to take this on serious because it's of course, it's easy to say we should have these statistics. For instance, we should give more existence or independence or sovereignty to these communities. But don't forget from where we come. You know, we had the Second World War in which there was a community which was counted. The last who were counted were the Nazis, you know, was the Jews, you know, and were, you know, it's a bad memory
it's not
for
a noble time,
yeah,
French life. No.
Yeah. We have experienced abroad a situation in which when people start to count who they are on ethnical basis, like Rwanda, one day it can. Go very far and lead to very critical actions. So this is something we must really take care about. I mean, and when you take the example of your children who are mixed race like mine, where would you put them? In which part of the statistic? Are they black? Are they white? Who are they? And, you know, it's something, I'm a traditional Republican for that, Republican tradition in my mind.
Republican.
I really feel, yes, I really feel that to have a fraternity or sorority or whatever, if you have to be equal in the terms, I mean, and the Republic knows only citizens. Citizen, you are a citizen, means you have the same rights. And for instance, in Belgium, where to some extent they have adopted the same principle that in England, Belgium is the real, it's the focus where all this terrorism had started, you know. And why? Because the politicians have delegated the power to these communities for a long time. Certain parts of Brussels were completely outside the, not the Republic, it's a kingdom, but outside the country, you know. It was, okay, you are Arab, you will deal with your representative, and we don't take care about that. You will. And then what happens? They have become, you know, the real stronghold of terrorism. So take care of this.
But it has nothing to compare with Paris. We had bombings in Paris for 30 years. I mean, let's not forget that in 1986, we had the first bombing that killed, how many, 12, 14 people?
Not
at Port Royal, Tati.
At Tati.
We had a few months later another one
in
the metro.
It was different. It was Lebanon.
But it was linked to religion as well. And I think we are far more a nest for terrorism than Belgium. Belgium is, actually, because they had their first...
Numbers-wise.
They had their first attacks a few months ago. But in France, it's a long tradition.
And in Bali, here, 200 people.
But that's true. Look, just because I suppose the question... You're all wrestling with it, and I really respect what you... I hope I sort of convey that I know... I can imagine what you're going through. But it just sounds to me as if worries about... The Republican tradition is so firmly felt that is it possible to re-examine whether it is falling short at the moment? Something's going wrong with bringing a new generation of people into that very tradition you favour so much. Do you see what I'm saying? Is the Republican tradition...
But I think it's not the principle which is failing. It is the... Maybe the effort that we have made to make it real. I mean, but it's not the principle. I don't see any reason in the moment to change the principle of this republic that we have.
Okay.
I don't see how we can go to the suburbs of Paris and say, okay, you're Muslim? Stay between you. It's okay. Perfect. We give you the key of the car and you do whatever you want. I mean, this is something which is absolutely opposite to...
It's already the case.
Sometimes. No, but that's true. Sometimes, and some people, and politicians especially, that has been pointed out recently, there are local politicians who arrange, you know, for instance, to be elected with the different community, to buy, in a certain way, the votes, I mean, because they see they can make an arrangement with the chief of the different communities. Yeah. This is not our principle. It is the contrary. It is people who don't respect these ideas. And me, I think the ship is still
sailing.
Floating, yes.
Do you want to add to that, Marie, who's thinking hard?
What's funny is that we carefully avoid this kind of conversation together when we have drinks, you know? Yeah. And now we have it in public, so...
It's hard, I know. And Nicola, still, clearly you feel very...
angry.
Yeah. Well, I can feel his vibes.
You do feel angry, don't you?
Oh, yes. Really?
At what?
I'm not pretending to be angry. I'm angry.
At what, precisely?
Because I love my country, and as you said, I don't want to see it collapsing. I mean, about a matter of not admitting that we are... we have diversity in our country, and we have to change our mindsets on that matter. We really have to. We had bombings twice this year. I mean, 2015. Let's do something about something more crucial than just trying to send police in the dangerous, so to speak, areas. And let's think about what we think are crucial values as well. Mm-hmm.
Well, look, I'm going to open it. Well, I could keep chattering on, but as you can see, there's all these marvellous books that our guests have penned. And so I'm going to open it up to you now because there are loads more questions. Yes, instantly, I thought there would be. That was the first. Just say who you are, please. And
my name is John O'Brien. I'd like to raise the issue of the French conception of empire, which was a bit different from some of the other empires, whereby all those people in the French Empire were French, whereas in the other empires they weren't necessarily so. That was fine as long as the non-metropolitan French stayed elsewhere. But with the decline of the French Empire, large numbers of those people who were non-metropolitan finished up in metropolitan France, and the traditional definition of republicanism did not adjust. Now, the word we've heard today is integration. The word we haven't heard is assimilation. And the defenders, it seems to me, that the defenders of the Republic are actually, without being conscious of it, defending a model of assimilation rather than a diverse model of integration.
Very
That's a question.
Thank you. So are you defending, in a way, Jean-Christophe, a model of assimilation, actually not integration, though you're using the word integration?
I didn't get all the answer of the question.
It's a concept of empire, you know, how the French, everybody was a citizen of France, and the English, they certainly weren't, nor were the Dutch, nor were the Germans. Now, has that, in a strange sort of a way, that worked as long as they all stayed where they were, not come to metropolitan France?
No, this is one of the paradox, for instance, of the extreme right. Jean-Marie Le Pen, for instance, was in favor of French Algeria. He wanted that Algeria would stay French. And if Algeria would have stayed French, there would be 30 million of Algerians who would be French citizens, which is a paradox because now the extreme right want them out. You know, it's a very funny situation, tragical also. No, I think it's not a matter of assimilation. We are beyond that. It's not a matter of assimilation of what we propose. I think it is to get into a common community. But it's very true, as when I was ambassador in Senegal in a former one of our former colony, it's difficult. It is true. It is difficult to explain when we give a visa or don't give a visa to a Senegalese. Why this one would be integrated in the community and this one would remain in his country. It's difficult because most of them, they have family in France and they say they are French and you pretend they are French because they are across the border and they are inside the country and we are not. This is it. I mean, the empire doesn't exist any longer, but we are a nation. They have their nations. And this is different destiny for them and for us.
Okay, there was a hand went up there. I don't know whether you can raise. Thank you.
Hi there. I've just come back from being a teacher in France, and I was there during the aftermath of the attacks. And what I found surprising was instructions given to me as a teacher. And that was to not offer my political views, not offer my my views about anything going on in the world, and to keep everything very, very balanced in the classroom. And I think, personally, that comes down to the idea of laïcité in schools. And I wonder whether you think that the problem lies in that children in schools can't have open discussion about what's going on in the world, and I wanted to know what you thought about that.
This is you, I know.
The teacher is supposed to be neutral, not to openly tell his or her political views, etc. But when the kids come back home, all the teachers, in fact, say what they think. And when you're in school, you know exactly which teacher is on the right, which teacher is on the left. You know it. You feel it, or they even say it. And about laïcité, it's a big, big debate. I mean, it's not a big debate. It's a value in France. I don't know. I know I have many things to say, but we have little time. What do you...
Do you talk about laïcité to your children?
Oh, I don't talk about laïcité to my children. We laugh about we try to treat a lot of things with humor. We are atheist at home. We don't believe in God, and we And it comes like a second nature in a way. My family, we always had fun about religion, about religious people, about all the sort of priests and superstitions and everything. All this is ridiculous to my eyes. So yes, there is a cultural gap with new generations of migrants. That's for sure. But there is a cultural gap, for example, about gay people too. The new migrants are when we enabled the gay people to get married. Some of my kids' friends were really offended. They don't understand how gay people can get married because they were raised in Mali, and I understand them. I mean, there is a huge cultural gap, and it won't get away like that. But so it's a
sigh.
Can I just add something to answer this lady? In France, you may have noticed that students or kids at school are not encouraged to express themselves. You agree, right? I mean, the more you reproduce what your teacher told you, the best student you are, right?
So it's conformity.
So that's an answer to, just listen and do a good paper with all your teacher told you. That's the main problem in our education system. And that's why people are not, I mean, they don't express themselves at school. So when will they really express themselves?
When they come to Australia or something. They're throughout Sydney. Anyway, it's fabulous. I love it. There's another lady had her head up. Go ahead.
When a country has something a lot, it gives it a name. We are at a writers' festival. So Australia has offered the world kangaroo or koala. There is a word, hypocrite. Isn't it time to finally change the slogan of La République?
Do you know, I just couldn't fully understand what your final question was then. Sorry, you're going
to... Do we have to change the word republic, you mean?
The slogan of the republic.
Got it. The slogan of the republic. Do you have to...
Ooh. Liberté, égalité, fraternité.
Do you have to revisit some of these?
No, I don't agree with that. I stay firmly, I stay steady on this principle. I think it's not the lack of it's because we don't defend them enough that there are these problems. But to go back to laïcité, I would just want. To say a word about the children and schools, you know, laïcité, it's not something which is only, a comfort. It's also the way to protect some basic rights. For instance, in certain classes, when the teacher talk about the Shoah, about the genocide in the Second World War, there are children who deny the Shoah, and there are teachers of history, especially, who have problems to teach the Second World War because there is this kind of understanding that it's a plot, it's not true, the Jews are ruling the world and such kind of things, you know. So laïcité, it means also to give a possibility to all these communities, including those who are not the majority, I mean, like the Jews, for instance, I mean, to be protected. And it's something that we must stay steady. We must not say, okay, you believe something else, it's your right, it is your religion, so please go ahead. No, I think we have to protect this common ground, you know, of I'm sorry, what I call the Republic.
Okay.
And the girls, I know cases of girls really well protected from being forced marriage, from forced marriages. The Republic does some good things for some pupils at school. There is protection.
Yeah.
It fails on many other matters, but there are some things that are really well done, especially for girls. And in my school, there was a little girl that was protected from, how do you call that, genital mutilation.
Yeah.
So there are some things that work. Mm.
Lots works, I think. Yes, behind you. There's a man behind you. And then we might have one more.
Hello, Keith Sansom. We live here and have a home in Burgundy, and we too were in France during the bombings. I have a very simple question. Is anything going to change?
In Burgundy?
Is anything going
to change? In Burgundy, never.
Incidentally, I have to say, in some of the reading for this, I discovered that the digital divide between metropolitan France and rural France is staggering. You've still got dial-up in a lot of places.
What does it mean, dial-up?
You were linked to the internet via the phone. It's slow. So it's a really huge difference. Yeah. I didn't know that. Are you conscious of that? Because you have a place in the mountains too.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, but since we arrived to the end of the panel, I think I just want to say that situation, I mean, of course, Nicolas, he's going away now, he's more New Zealand.
He's a Kiwi,
you know, he's not. But we still live in France and, you know, we live in France. I mean, it's possible. It's good. It's a pleasure. And we welcome all those who want to come and visit us. I mean, this remains, when you look at the whole world, where there are so many difficult and terrible situations, this remains a country which has its creativity, which has its quality of life, its future. And I don't want to go into this statement about decline, about... of course, there are problems, but who don't have? And how long we have heard that, you know? I think if we had this panel with Voltaire and Diderot, you know, they would have said that it was better before, you know, so...
I don't know that Voltaire would have said that, but anyway... I think we've got one more question. There's a lady that you put his hand up first.
Thank you. Oh, hi. My name is Olivier Vogetta. I just had a question about the love-hate relationship between the French and the police. So last year, after the attacks in January and November, you know, all the French citizens loved the police. They were the heroes. They were saving the day. And 1 year later, it's still back to the same problem. Everybody hates the police. So what's your take on that?
Very interesting. So the police, so authority, in other words, authority as represented by the state. What do you, that's a very interesting question.
We just have to say that there was an attempt to burn a police car 2 days ago, right? Yeah, with some policemen inside. Yeah, in France, yeah.
Really?
That are on the headlines today on the newspapers. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I think that's why you asked the questions. No?
No, sorry. He was talking about the police, I think, particularly in terms of changing attitudes. Do you think that there is is this provoking? I know that you're saying you're working through your children, and I fully grasp that, but do you think it's quietly provoking different conversations among adults about what license you give people in authority to act against terrorism and so on?
I have a tendency to think that the police has too much power in France. It's a long tradition since Fouquet, c'est ça? But we actually needed them at some point. I even kissed a policeman after the attacks.
Gosh.
But I never thought I would do that. I'm a bit of an anarchist. I love freedom. I love to be left free. But, yes, we do need them at the moment. I don't know. I can't generalize. The police has a tendency in France to strike young people a bit too often. I don't know, what do you think, Nicolas?
Of course we need police. Of course we're happy they are there. Of course. I mean, we complain about seeing people with guns on the streets, but we are happy and we feel protected when we see them. And I think it's even worse in the US where you can get shot with almost no reason. In France, almost never happened.
No, sure.
So we are quite. I think we are quite lucky to have police forces in our street at the moment.
But in our culture, there have always been two sides. You know, of the police. There is Guignol and le gendarme de Saint-Tropez. there is the good cop, bad cop. Yeah. And me when I see that they have found resist to a terrorist attack, I'm happy. When they put a fine on my car, I'm angry. You know, it's the way it is. I mean, but there, we have a lot of police now. I was surprised when I arrived 2 weeks ago. When I arrived at first in New Zealand, they brought me to some broadcasting, to some television shows, and when we come into a building, we put the hand like this, and in New Zealand they say, but no problem, nobody searches you, nobody say nobody will open my bag, no, you just come in, you know. And this is impossible, because now this has changed completely. We are searched everywhere. It's not even police, it's sometimes it's people that we have taken out of jail to become, security.
Well, look, ladies and gentlemen, I think we have been really, it's been a big treat to hear the three of you so honestly wrestling with these very difficult questions. And I know some of you are able to do some signings. Who's going straight away? You've got to go.
I have to go.
You have to go straight away to take your daughter whale watching, which
Absolutely.
Is wonderful.
Do you know if there are whales at the moment? If it's a season? No, really, I'm asking. They have arrived?
I thought it was a bit early for whales,
it's a
actually.
Bit early.
I thought, okay. But I'm not sure. Anyway, yes, okay. Yes, there's nods here. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please thank Jean-Christophe Ruffin, Maria Dariescu, and Nicolas Fard.
Merci.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Sydney Writers Festival. You can find a range of other talks, interviews, and discussions on our iTunes channel. And for more information about the festival, subscribe to our email newsletter through our website.